My name is Bill Campbell, and I was preceded in my job by Don Lipset, who was called the permanent secretary. I'm the not-so-permanent secretary, and the job is evolving, as you will find out at the national meeting, to Lenore Ely, who will become the new executive secretary. We're no longer just the secretary, but the executive director or the executive secretary. Since T.S. Eliot only used the phrase, the permanent things, once, perhaps it is more appropriate to introduce our final panel with a motto that T.S. Eliot adopted from Mary, Queen of Scots. In the end is my beginning. It is the final phrase of his poem, East Coker, second of the four quartets. Logically, it might appear that we should have placed human nature at the beginning rather than at the end of the meeting. It surely is the most fundamental question. If human nature is not one of the permanent things, then we are adrift. If the future is plastic, or if we are simply blank slates, then Etch-a-Sketch is the technology for us. Once you get tired of something, just shake it up, America. One of our speakers, Laurie Arnhart from Northern Illinois University, recently was a speaker at a Mont Pelerin meeting in the Galapagos Islands, appropriately, on precisely the subjects of this panel. He is a defender of evolution and evolutionary psychology, and he has written extensively on the subject. He is a political philosopher with such titles as Political Questions, Political Philosophy from Plato to Rawls. He may not know it, but his 1998 book, Darwinian Natural Right, The Biological Ethics of Human Nature, is currently available on Amazon for $11,795.78. It's the only copy. From an inappropriately named bookstore called Wise Penny Books. That does not include shipping of $3.95. In 2005, he published Darwinian Conservatism. For easy access, for those of you who have not had the preliminary emails that have gone out to many of the members and speakers and so on, you can take a look at his Darwinian Conservatism versus Metaphysical Conservatism in the Intercollegiate Review, Fall 2010, which is online. Now, he is on record as saying, quote, the left has traditionally assumed that human nature is so malleable, so perfectible, that it can be shaped in almost any direction. By contrast, a Darwinian science of human nature supports traditionalist conservatives and classical liberals in their realist view of human imperfectibility and in their commitment to ordered liberty as rooted in natural desires, cultural traditions, and prudential judgments. In other places, he refers to Frank Meyer's fusionism as being compatible with his views. One would gather that he would be happy with the economist Deepak Lal, who was the president and summarized the recent Mont Pelerin Society meeting. He says, the general conclusion I drew about what we now know about human nature from the meeting was that the genial Scot, David Hume, sitting in his study, contemplating his fellow creatures, had got it right. Contemporary neuroscience and evolutionary psychology is validating the conjectures of his treatise of human nature, end quote. I would slightly amend this statement by stating that Hume was genial, not when he was sitting alone in his study, but when he was involved in the literary and culinary feasts, as they were in Edinburgh, with his good friend Adam Smith, that most clubbable man. Alfred Marshall once said that it's all in Adam Smith. Presumably, he meant good economics derived from Adam Smith's inquiry into the nature and causes of the wealth of nations. Marshall also used as a slogan of his book on principles of economics, first one really to have that title, Natura non facit saltum, nature does not make leaps. He was an admirer of Herbert Spencer, and Marshall intended the epigraph to proclaim his adherence to evolutionary thought. But now I think, if somebody says, it's all on Adam Smith, it probably refers to his first book, The Theory of Moral Sentiments, which came out in 1759. We are now having to prove with hard scientific data the obvious proposition with which Adam Smith begins the theory of moral sentiments. And here's the first sentence. How selfish soever man may be supposed, there are evidently some principles in his nature which interest him in the fortune of others and render their happiness necessary to him, though he derives nothing from it except the pleasure of seeing it. And as you can imagine, the Germans managed to make an industry out of this. Das Adam Smith problem. How do you make consistent the wealth of nations with the theory of moral sentiments? Now we know that human nature is under attack. It can be seen in many recent books. The title of one recent book by Nicholas Agar, Humanity's End, Why We Should Reject Radical Enhancement. The radical enhancers will allow us to escape from human biology, develop anti-aging therapies that will produce, quote, longevity, escape, velocity. I think it just means prolong life, but there's a curve there that is supposed to be scientifically valid. And it will make us all smart, peace-loving, and cooperative creatures. But I think we should pay heed to Adam Smith's favorite tombstone, on which was inscribed, I was well, I wish to be better, here I am. Adam Smith's principle of sympathy is being grounded in hard scientific terms. Mirror neurons in monkeys and ultimately humans are being discussed in such journals as Behavioral and Brain Sciences. There's also talk about sort of the directability of sympathy, no longer just a... Smith recognized we're always never quite certain what other people are feeling or thinking, but now they've come up with scientific ways to sort of hardwire this so you can get this directly. It all sounds to me like Adam Smith on steroids. Our second speaker will be Peter Augustine Lawler, who's Dana Professor of Government at Berry College. Although he teaches courses in political philosophy and American politics, he was also appointed to be on President Bush's Council on Bioethics, significantly enough, dissolved by President Obama in 2009. He is executive director of the quarterly journal Perspectives on Political Science and has been chair of the politics and literature section of the American Political Science Association. He has served on the editorial board of the new bilingual critical edition of Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America. He also serves on the editorial boards of many journals. And in 2007, he received the Richard Weaver Prize in Scholarly Letters. Now, Richard Weaver is part of our oral tradition in the Philadelphia Society, and there are many people who remember his, you know, striking battles and contests in the early years of the Society. Unfortunately, he died the year before the Society was founded. So oral tradition has, it's true in spirit, but it's not true in fact. Peter has written or edited 15 books. His newest book from ISI is Modern and American Dignity, for which he was named a Georgia Author of the Year. His books, Postmodernism Rightly Understood, Aliens in America, Stuck with Virtue, and Homeless and at Home in America, have been widely and positively reviewed. In more than 250 articles, he has written often on such diverse topics as biotechnology, Walker Percy, Alexis de Tocqueville, and Whit Stillman. In his blog, Rightly Understood, Peter has had several discussions with Larry Arnhart, Most recently, on September 24th, he posted Darwin versus Christianity and transhumanism. So you are going to be privileged to be part of an ongoing discussion and quasi-debate, civil in nature, as appropriate for the Philadelphia Society. Our third speaker is Brendan P. Fote, assistant editor of the New Atlantis. He has a bachelor's degree in political science from the University of Calgary and in biology from the University of Alberta. He is a frequent contributor to National Review Online, the Weekly Standard, and of course, the New Atlantis. And I'll just sort of push this publication here. The New Atlantis consistently has very provocative, fresh articles on the subjects of technology, biotechnology, and science, well worth your effort to look it up online. He has recently written on the claim about Obama to be our scientist-in-chief. Now, Obama didn't make this about himself. It was somebody else introducing Obama and introduced him as scientist-in-chief. And this comes out of the utopian hopes generated by the Obama's BRAIN initiative. The government website states that, quote, "The Human Genome Project demonstrates the potential impact that ambitious research programs like the BRAIN initiative can have. From 1988 to 2003, the federal government invested $3.8 billion in the Human Genome Project, which has generated an economic output of $796 billion, a return of $141 for every $1 invested." Wow, that's an economic multiplier worth thinking about. If we just put in maybe $10 to $20 billion into the BRAIN initiative, we'd be out of our economic difficulties. But if he only had a brain. Brendan recognizes that we need not only brains, but hearts and courage. Policy must be grounded in ethics and an understanding of human nature. Our final speaker will be Sarah Beth Vosburg. She will shed light on the rosy futures described by the radical enhancers. She is a PhD student under Ellis Sandoz at Louisiana State University. Her dissertation will draw on the works of Aldous Huxley, George Orwell, C.S. Lewis. Today, she will link the works of C.S. Lewis, particularly his novel, That Hideous Strength, to Russell Kirk's ideas of permanent things. The Enlightenment project of conquering nature has come perilously close to conquering human nature, one human by another. We have already seen in the 20th century the totalitarian temptation of producing a new type of human being, the new Soviet man, or for the Nazis, the superior Aryan or Germanic master race. It remains to be seen what our scientist-in-chief, Obama, will cook up for us through his new BRAIN initiative. So without further ado, I'll introduce Larry Arnhart.